Okay, well, hi everybody, and this is World Invocation Day. And I imagine whenever you may be reaching this point in your studies, the Great Invocation will still be meaningful, very meaningful. So let's use it from the point of light within the mind of God. Let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. 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 Okay. Let's, even though the full moon is coming up and I may have to pause earlier than usual, let's talk about the mode of approach to the externalization. This is program number 69, actually, and it's from page 558, toward the end of 558, onward. Okay, one of the most important things emerging from the theme of this amazing and imminent event, the reappearance of the hierarchy on the physical plane, is the factor of the developments and the adjustments going on within the hierarchy itself, in preparation for this happening. So, and of these matters, we have little cognizance, very little, but DK has given us a few hints. Okay. I'm just trying to bring all this into, this is what happens when you rush. Don't rush. There is no rush, no hurry, and yet there is no time to lose. It tells us in the rules of the road. Okay. So let's, incidentally, I would here point out that what will take place and what is already tentatively taking place is the externalization of the ashrams. We've heard that phrase over and over again, but the manner in which it will occur is still incompletely disclosed to us. We do know that in all the five planetary centers, a master will be found and surrounded by his initiates. And disciples. And we do know that, according to Master D.K. at least, that they will be sought out for their opinion, because they will be known to be so wise and to have the good of the whole in mind. The great official departments, such as the teaching department or that of emerging civilizations, will not at this time appear. Their activities will still for a long time be retained within the hierarchy upon its own plane. Well, I guess maybe that tells us something about the appearance of Master Kutumi in the teaching department, and perhaps of a seventh-ray master, or of Master R himself, who we anticipate will be one of the externalizing masters at some point, because he will be involved with at least a branch of the schools found in the Occident, which is not yet appearing. Okay. The first step is the appearance of certain ashrams controlled by certain masters upon the physical plane, evoking general recognition and guaranteeing to the public the fact of the hierarchy and the restoration of the mysteries. Later, if these steps prove successful, you know, it's always an experiment with hierarchy, other and more important reappearances will be possible, beginning with the reappearance of the Christ. So, first, let me just copy this. So first, certain ashrams, and only then the possibility of the reappearance of the Christ. Reappearance must wait until the guarantee is recognized. Certain masters upon the physical plane will appear, and with them, I imagine, certain aspects of their ashrams, and there will be general recognition. And the restoration of the mysteries will be a commonly accepted fact, it appears. And if these steps are successful, then later. So, you know, the whole idea of rushing the reappearance of the Christ, as if he were already here waiting for the press to discover him, is a little bit, a lot at variance with what Master D.K. is saying here. But in the meantime, great and momentous happenings are taking place. Within the hierarchy and in relationship to its membership. Disciples upon the periphery of any ashram are apt to be unobservant of the training and attitudes of those who are senior to them in an ashram. They frequently overlook the fact that they too, from the Christ down to the humblest initiate, are in process of steady and increasing hierarchical discipline, training, and instruction. Yes, we look at the Christ sometimes as the Son of God who has attained final development. and we forget the great process of evolution, which affects all emanated lives. But of course, we don't consider the Christ as an emanation, just as we all are. The Buddhists, however, do. And it is to them that we must look for a greater measure of truth in these matters. Because the from the Christ on down to the humblest initiate, all are in training. Even solar angels are in training. And a pure avatar is a rare thing, coming to a certain sphere of activity without the need for gain of any time, kind, and only to give. Because the senior disciples and initiates have reached a goal which has seemed for quite unattainable, for long, quite unattainable to the average aspirant, it is assumed that they have attained. The fact that they have only passed a milestone upon the endless way of bliss is entirely forgotten. Well, this is what I've been saying, but we have to have a much broader view of our solar system and of the local cosmos and of cosmos in general in order to understand that no attainment is final. It is the death knell of progress to assume that the attainment of any great being is final. Even the logos of the universe, there's always going to be more that can be achieved within the boundless periphery of absolute infinitude. But owing to the impulsion of life itself, progress ever continues. Knowledge must ever be transmuted into wisdom. Love must ever be accompanied by divine will. Planning must ever give way to divine purpose. Light must ever be succeeded by life. From the hierarchy, the initiate must pass to Shambhala, and from Shambhala, he will follow one or other of the seven paths, now nine paths. The path of evolution gives way to the way of higher evolution. Planetary recognitions eventually expand into solar contacts. The Christ consciousness eventually unfolds into something so all-inclusive that we have as yet no word for it in or any need of words. Recognition of the Father and of monadic being causes all lesser recognitions to fade out. I mean, everything that we have here and are really is the monad in various guises of apparent limitation, and soul consciousness and progressive life and form are no longer goals but left behind. This is one of those wonderful summary paragraphs which gives us the incentive for constant movement forward and helps us avoid fixation upon the stultifying notion that whether it's Jesus or Muhammad or any world disciple, any high initiate training is ongoing and progress is ongoing. There's something about the concrete mind which really likes finality, you know. But that is not in truth, and we have to, you know, watch out for those closures. You know, forever in heaven, you might say. Forever in heaven. And what happened to the foreverness that has ever existed at any point on the time continuum? Well, the mind has to be lubricated a bit in order to elude concrete-mindedness, build the antikarana, enter the higher mind, the abstract mind also, and beyond. In spite of all this, it is necessary to remember that the gain of all experience forever persists. There's always a forever at every moment, a forever behind, a forever ahead. Nothing is ever lost because, well, all is contained in absolute infinitude, which is the self-reflection of the transuniversal deity, the absolute deity, I've sometimes called it, which is, of course, it's not quite the same as absoluteness, but it is the first step away from absoluteness. Nothing is ever lost. That which life in form has conferred is still in the possession of the immortal spiritual entity, at least for the duration of the universe, any universe, I would say. That which the soul consciousness had unfolded and included is still the rich endowment of being, centered now in the monad. Hierarchical experiences merged into purposes of the council chamber of Shambhala, but ability to work in the hierarchy ever lasts because the hierarchical constitution and institution condition all manifestation. For what reason this is so, no one knows, but so is the divine will. Well, a vast picture is presented to us here, and we can be grateful that it is so. We have lived forever. And it is just saying such a thing, of course, is shocking to our normal mental process, because we just can't contain the foreverness of being, the foreverness of what is truly life. But we can ponder on it. And I always find that at this time of the Gemini full moon, pondering on such things is more fruitful, perhaps, than even at other times. And maybe you will too. In synthesis and in the all-inclusive awareness of the great life, which enfolds all that is, everything except what we know as evil, everything is persistent and forever endures. Forever. And this, even after the pralayic apparent disappearance of the universal logos and all that has been accomplished, it has always been registered in absolute infinitude. And even evil is somehow noted as a possibility. It's a maladjustment, really. Mal, evil. Maladjustment in semi-ignorance of various forms of emanation. You will have noted, if you are true students of what I have given out to the world, so we always question ourselves, that information and then hierarchy has fallen into three major categories. Number one, the work of the hierarchy in relation to man and to the three worlds of human evolution. That's mainly what we consider, because we are still, as human beings, rather self-centered. The interior constitution of the hierarchy and its internal activity, about which we will know nothing real until we really enter the ashram, though we may be told and may speculate. And number three, its superior relation to Shambhala, and also beyond Shambhala to extraplanetary livingness. But it seems that these two are included together. So three major categories, and in a book like this, we're given some hint as to category two and three, when we've been so very interested in category one. A great deal that has been conveyed to you in the two final categories has been merged by you into an interested but totally impractical realization that the hierarchy apparently has a life of its own, which proceeds independently of humanity, and that it also has its own goals and objectives, which are no concern of yours. I remember Alice Bailey saying, well, if only we disciples would just mind our own business. Of course, ultimately, our business is that of the entire universe, but how many trillions, quadrillions, sextillions, whatever earth years ahead is that? These deductions are dependent upon your domination by the separative mind. For in reality, the work and activity proceeding in all three centers, Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, are merged, fused, and interdependent. They are all mutually evocative and invocative. So, a great synthesis exists. But we have no idea of its mode of function. Well, synthesis is, and unity must be created. I think the creation of unity is, you know, for us, it is the main factor. As we try to bring forth a degree of love, the soul ray of our particular planet. The fact, for instance, that hierarchy is approaching closer to humanity and will eventually make an appearance upon the physical plane, he, you know, avoids any kind of real-time indication, but I do think that the age of Aquarius must have, well, begun, certainly before the Christ will appear, and perhaps the whole process is a bit further off than we may suspect. It's certainly not 2025, at which time we might suspect, well, the Christ will reappear. No, that's too early, given what must precede that appearance. So, the fact that the hierarchy is approaching closer to humanity and will eventually make an appearance upon the physical plane is due not only to hierarchical intent, but to the demand of mankind and to the strong vibration and note which humanity has set up. A center like hierarchy has to be invoked and evoked. The call has to go forth, and it must be of sufficient strength and purity for an evocation, an answer, response to result. To that extent, humanity controls some of the activity of the hierarchy and thus precipitates action. At the same time, all that is happening can be traced to Shambhala, is inherent in divine purpose and is impulsed and impelled by Shambhala energy, distributed throughout the planet via the hierarchy in the majority of cases. I guess he's showing us here the interdependency of these three great centers and saying that the externalization of the hierarchy before humanity is dependent on processes within all of them. Both the hierarchy and humanity are brought under the influence of extraplanetary forces of, you know, the spirit of peace, the avatar of synthesis are such, and so are the planets which have representatives in Shambhala, are brought under the influence of extraplanetary forces which make their impact upon the planet via Shambhala. Therefore, a great interdependence emerges, of which the head, heart, and solar plexus centers in the individual man's etheric body are symbols. Now, head, this is interesting because the head is Shambhala, the heart is hierarchy, but often humanity is looked at as the throat center, but sometimes as the aspiring, invoking solar plexus center. And sometimes in its higher brackets, humanity is seen as the Ajna center, you know, in its mode as new group of world servers, that portion within humanity which does at last serve. Their united relation keeps the man functioning and demonstrating as a coherent whole at a particular level of consciousness. And you can ask, well, what about the, you know, what about the throat center? It is essential that students endeavor to grasp this and so develop within themselves at least the rudiments of this synthetic united grasp of living conditions and of a vital situation. These instructions can aid all earnest aspirants and disciples to develop this type of understanding with as much speed and accuracy as possible. Yes, well, we have to have a different point of view, don't we? An expanded, deepened point of view. And he's telling us how we can develop it through the wise use of these instructions. Head, heart, solar plexus. That's something to keep in mind. Three centers that humanity represents, then particularly solar plexus, throat, and Ajna center, depending upon the brackets within humanity that we are referencing. These instructions can aid all earnest aspirants and disciples to develop this type of understanding with as much speed and accuracy as possible. I'm recalling the last sermon of the Buddha, which the Christ will intone today, as every day, which is the full moon of Gemini. Be ye earnest, he tells his disciples. Be ye earnest, my brethren. So it is distinctive of the hierarchical type of mind, concerned with itself as a divine group, conscious of the pull and evocative power of the highest center, Shambhala, responsive to the demands of humanity and sensitive to the call of that third major center through which the life of the planetary logos expresses itself. And that's humanity itself. The earnest brethren, the members of the new group of world servers, the serving body is sensitive to the call of humanity itself. And it can be a very demanding call because things are not yet well within the body of humanity. The consciousness of the master is therefore preoccupied with three lines of responsibility, but only one of them is innate within the living organism of which he is a part. That aspect of his life is invocative in two directions, towards Shambhala and towards humanity. To him, the other two centers are evocative. They call forth. So, hierarchy first, and then the evocation as possible of Shambhala and hierarchy and humanity. Sorry. And I certainly have a lot of ease there, don't I? Well, one fine day, this will be fixed, and one can again type an E either with responsiveness or with impunity. Today, human beings as a whole are so loudly invocative that the entire trend of the life of the hierarchy and its plans to date have been subjected to change. They have been evoked in a new way, to postponement as far as certain interior and purely hierarchical determinations are concerned, and to a hastening of certain plans which were stated, if I may use such a word, or slated, to have taken place several centuries later than this, but which, owing to the unexpected preparedness of humanity, can take place, not prematurely really, but securely and in the fullness of time. The fullness of time as regards the particular planning with which we are dealing is from now until the year 2025 AD, a brief period of time indeed, in which to see the consummation of the larger purpose of the planetary logos working through the three major centers within his body of manifestation. So we have an acceleration. And the aim of hierarchy to deal with certain factors which humanity has hastened. So the purpose then was threefold. And it's not so much premature, but this is interesting. The fullness of time is until 2025. I'm talking right here just 5 years before the higher interlude of 2025. We're still in the midst of the higher interlude of 2020. And I suppose much will be accomplished in these 5 years. And I suppose the pressure will be rather extreme. So hierarchy has adapted to the loud invocative cry of humanity and postponed some things, developments, and had to hasten others. One of the major hastenings, at least as I understand it, is the discovery of atomic energy and its destructive and immensely constructive possibilities during this end of the age of Pisces, when in fact the discovery was slated for the age of Capricorn, more than 2,000 years ahead. And I think that's an astonishing credit, in a way, to the fifth ray ashram. So the planetary logos is working through three major centers within his body of manifestation, And we're talking about the consummation of the purpose of the planetary logos. You know, it can't be the entire purpose, but it can be the consummation of a purpose slated for enactment as planned at a later time. So what is this threefold purpose? One, it involved the ability of those in the council chamber at Shambhala to react to and absorb certain extraplanetary energies and to use them in an intraplanetary sense. It had not been anticipated by the directing agents of these forces that our planetary logos would achieve a certain goal so early in time and space as he has. So this is one of three factors operating in relation to Shambhala. And credit is given here to the, well, not just to humanity, but to the planetary logos itself, without whose achievement humanity would not be achieving. It's kind of a two-way street, really. And the planetary logos is also dependent upon human achievement and the intensity of the invocation to humanity's invocation to higher sources. So next, it involved a great expansion numerically in the consciousness of the hierarchy. This is the hierarchy. This predates a great influx of initiates and disciples and a tremendous inflow of what is esoterically called angelic essence from the Deva kingdom under the direction of certain great Devas who have affiliated during the past 200 years with Shambhala. You wonder if the Lord Kashiti, the Lord Varuna, who are oftentimes cited, are not among those who have thus affiliated. This is a very, you know, esoteric kind of development. This, again, had not been expected so early. The result of this happening has been that the door of initiation through which mankind passes stands wider open, symbolically speaking, than ever before. And at the same time, the masters are passing with greater rapidity onto the way of higher evolution. This is due to the fact that initiates are fitting themselves so rapidly to take their places. They're, in a way, being forced forward from below. And disciples are moving into initiate position so fast that a great pressing forward has become legitimate, lawful, we might say. So this has to do with developments within hierarchy. The consummation of the larger purpose. You just wonder what degree of intensity will emerge during these next few years in order to make this possible. Then it involved finally a great awakening. He's going, you know, Shambhala, hierarchy, humanity. It involved finally a great awakening in the human family and a major spiritual reorientation. This again had been believed possible of accomplishment when the sun passed into Capricorn about 2300 years hence from the time of this writing, but it has already taken place and necessarily has brought about a basic adjustment in the plans of the hierarchy and a renewed emphasis upon the purpose as registered in Shambhala. So although we're behind, in some ways we're ahead in our effort to no longer be behind. And how would we know this? Well, we would not easily know it, but now we do. Okay, this being factual and the time ripe for decision has caused an intraplanetary ferment and a great activity in the three major centers. So, you know, internally, there's a lot more going on than even in our very busy external sphere of activity. In the last analysis, and this is the factor of supreme importance, this development, this unexpected right absorption of spiritual energy, this seizing of spiritual opportunity is due to humanity itself. Above everything else, it is the readiness of mankind for that which is new, and humanity's determination to create a new and better world, adapted more adequately to their renewed spiritual nature that is responsible for all the activity. So this is an achievement which humanity itself has managed to attain, and unexpected rapidity. In this section of our training themes, if I may call them so, we shall deal primarily with the response and the subsequent activity of the hierarchy in relation to humanity. Well, naturally enough, because we have to deal with what's going on within our own kingdom. And this will take the form of a new approach and a reappearance exoterically. Well, we cannot, you know, deal with the inner adjustments of hierarchy and certainly not of Shambhala in any great detail. It would be wise, therefore, to keep the following ideas, quite a few of them really, constantly in mind. Well, the full moon is coming up now, and I'm going to take a little break in this. And although we're not quite really finished here, we'll break it because we have to be ready for that full moon. And we have reached page 563 and have begun on 558. So this is 563, and I'll bring that down. Maybe this program is roughly, you know, roughly 45 minutes, a little shorter than usual. But I will resume as rapidly as I can. I'm not going to dare leave this on while we're doing other things. So I will bring this section to an end. Just take me a moment. And we'll be talking about certain ideas that we have to keep in mind when, again, we resume. So we finished here at number 9. And it's from 558 to 563. And it's about roughly 45 minutes. And the day, World Invocation Day in the year 2020, I hope when World Invocation Day comes that all of you, or whatever year this may be for you, manage to say the great invocation at regular intervals. Because you can really feel the support that occurs when you do that. Okay, so that'll be it, and lots of love, many blessings to you all. And this takes us about into a shorter program, but it'll be, you know, okay. So we'll stop the recording and end this and then go on a bit later.